Blog Talk Radio. family. All right. How's everybody doing out there? Peace, love, and light to everybody within the sound of my voice. I hope that this week's episode finds everybody doing fantastically well, feeling good, feeling groovy. John had a good Monday. This is a day of reflection. Monday is Moon Day, and we're definitely going to be going into some things tonight. I am very honored to have the chief of the Lakota Nation, Chief Chasing Horse, as my special guest this week. He's got some new information to share with the family. And we're going to be talking about some things that are serious tonight, family, for real. Continued birthday love and happiness to all the Scorpios out there. Hopefully everybody's doing all right and has had wonderful birthday celebrations. Happy birthday to my beautiful niece, Maya. Happy birthday to my girl, Crystal. Happy birthday to my girl, Vanilla. Happy birthday to all the Scorpions out there, y'all. I know y'all out there. I know y'all. In any event, I'm going to just go in a little bit. I'm expecting the chief around 7:30, so I'll talk about a few things before that comes. With regard to last Tuesday's election, clap, 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 clap. I feel like we did it. I feel like we did a really great job. There was a lot at stake, and I know that some people were feeling kind of hopeless, but I was like, there's no need to be hopeless if you get out there and do your thing, especially in droves, and people showed up and showed out. Of course, a very large majority of beautiful, melanated people came out to vote, that's for sure. But women and young girls, some young girls who had, you know, just turned 18 and registered to vote, they all showed up and showed out. Because, again, if this whole Roe versus Wade reversal is, you know, an issue for this country for some strange reason, you know, after almost 50 years of having it on the books, all of a sudden, one member of the Supreme Court, supported by a few of the other conservative members, all of a sudden just attempts to get rid of it on a federal level. And so this is why there's so much going on and there's so much at stake with regard to women's rights and women's health and many other things that come after that, because if they're going to attack that, then, of course, they can attack many other things. So people came out and represented the masses, have spoken in many situations. The Republicans were defeated. Now they're defeated and delusional. They are – now they're starting to turn on their dog. They're starting to turn on Trump, which is good because I'm like, he needs to go away and go away far. However, you know, he's still his crazy narcissistic self. He's now attempting to sue the January 6th committee so he won't have to testify. Just shady and crazy as usual. But a lot of the individuals that he endorsed lost. And I'm very happy about that. You know, I think that that whole machine, that whole movement of MAGA and maggotness is a stain on this country. I feel as if they've taken insanity to a whole nother level. And again, when lies and rhetoric are spewed all over the place, most of which is untrue, and people start to believe it, take hold of it, and give it a reality, that's when we have a problem. And so, yeah, we do have an issue to deal with in this country. But as far as the last election, I feel that we did very well. I think we've surprised ourselves in some instances, if you really want to know. I know that we still have races in the Senate that are looming, but preferably we'll take those two. Because, these people are just insane. And I know I keep saying that, but if you really understand the definition of insane, as in crazy, as in something is wrong psychologically, there are issues with the mentality of specific individuals. That is what insanity is. And so when I look at what has happened, I'm so happy the ads are over. I'm sure some of y'all have to be too. I'm so happy that all the ads are finally over. Because people were drowning in ads. And even when you went on YouTube or you went onto another social media platform, before you could even get to the content that you're searching for, you got to watch this long video about whoever. As if we don't know how to research a candidate on our own. I'm so happy Dr. Oz lost. I'm so happy Doug Mastriano's nasty behind lost. I'm so happy. I'm like, ooh, it's just wonderful. Just wonderful. He was a monster. He would have been horrible for the state of Pennsylvania. He would have been absolutely disgusting and horrible, especially for the women of this state as well. So wonderful things happen, and, you know, we're going to keep hope alive. But, you know, I just want to commend everybody who went out and who did their civic duty and, you know, did their best to keep a mad man or a mad woman out of a very important governmental seat, whether it be Congress, Senate, a governor, any of them, just no. So that was a good thing. I don't know if you all are aware that the first Native American / African American man to become a U.S. Marshal was a man named Bass Reeves. I've talked about him in prior episodes of this show, but for the record, he spoke many different Native American languages, and he was unafraid. He was a very courageous man. And when the white U.S. Marshals were afraid to go into Western Territory, Oregon, and other states, he was the one that said he would go to get this really, really, really mean man, this crazy bad guy, according to the law, and bring him back dead or alive. So, I mean, he was fierce with a firearm. He was fierce with a firearm. There's a movie about it on, I think it's Netflix, and it's called, I think it's Hellbound, something about hell is in the title. I have to get that together. I apologize for that, family. But this hero, this man, was the prototype for the Lone Ranger. Remember the Lone Ranger with the white horse, and he was white in the white outfit and the white 10-gallon hat and the black mask and all of that? That, of course, is a fantasy. Bass Reeves did ride a white horse. He was friends to many, many, many Native Americans, many. So that's where you get the Tonto part. But it's very, you know, it's a very, very good story. Now, his life story does exist. There is a book on the life of Bass Reeves. Because the story... The movie just depicts his beginning, how he became a U.S. Marshal. It doesn't go into the over 700 bad guys that he brought in. And I think out of that, he only killed about seven. He was a very special person in history. And it's unfortunate that our history gets buried. And our history has also been hijacked and stolen. I came across another book called 103 Amazing Facts about the African American, I believe, in the Western United States. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but that was good. I read that today. I read that book today. Easy read, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of time. But it was very, very good. And it's actually written by a brother who's Native American of the Selig people, T-S-I-L-I-G-E, Seligi people. And he talks mainly about how many, many, as in tens of thousands of Black Native Americans here were from here. They weren't necessarily African in the way of being brought over through the transatlantic slave trade. They had already been here for thousands of years. And so when European colonization begins, at first you have a very interesting type of relationship, because for some, they befriended, some the European befriended, not the ones that they killed per se, but some of them they befriended and they established contracts and treaties and agreements and things, of course, all of which were broken. But they also utilized a lot of us to work with them, show them the way, show them the landscape of exactly, you know. And many of those brothers and sisters were dark-skinned Native American people. And so I always talk about how during the time of the Dawes Rolls, especially, D-A-W-E-S Rolls, they did like a census and they renamed and reclassified dark-skinned Native Americans as Negroes and Coloreds. And they were stripped of their Native heritage. They were stripped of their culture. And so was that you had, of course, massacres, of course. Yes, you had massacres where they would just kill people, especially women and children. Then you had the individuals that were made to walk the Trail of Tears, which is from the American South into the West Oklahoma Territory. And many Native Americans, a lot of us died along the way. But the fact that our history and our history has been stolen, our legacy has been stolen, and you did have white people who paid $5 to be listed as Indian or Native American, and that's who we call the $5 Indian. A lot of our history has been buried, and like I said, and stolen. And so, as I mentioned last week and even the week before, we have several historicities that were having difficulty claiming, even though we were the original civilization of those particular peoples. And it has happened to us in Kemet and in the Mediterranean areas of Greece, in Italy and Crete and other places like Macedonia, the Aegean Sea islands, other parts of Europe even. So much has just been rewritten, and we've been written out of it. The same thing happened here when it comes to being Native American and who your original Native Americans are. And I'm not talking about the Asiatic high cheekbones, slanted eyes, straight hair version, which came 6,000 years ago, but I'm talking about the very, very dark copper to bronze complexioned Native American who has since been renamed Negro and Black and Colored. And so that's another legacy. Then, as I mentioned before, we can go all the way into the Judaic faith of the Hebrew Israelite, and that those people were dark-skinned Black African people. And yet today, we have controversy with two African-American stars, one of them being Kanye West, the rapper and designer and mogul, and the other one being the professional NBA star, Kyrie Irving. And there's definitely a buck-breaking technique happening where they are trying to defame, discredit, and damn near dehumanize these two brothers for speaking the truth. And yes, I said the truth. So it's very interesting to me as we look at just these three historicities, these three cultures, these three indigenous ways of life. And one thing that I'm definitely learning is that the more they want to kick and scream and lie and cheat and steal and claim an indigenousness and a originality to any one of these three ways of life, it's interesting. I think the more they do it, the worse it's going to become for them, because we do know the truth. I'd like to find out personally, when did it become wrong for a black person to state that the original Hebrew Israelite is a black African person? When did that become a taboo to the point where I'm losing contracts and you messing with the money? When did that become something that we can't say? That's what's bugging me out, because being one who went to predominantly white Jewish primary schools in terms of, you know, elementary school, junior high school, and high school. And I had the opportunity to travel to Israel during that time. And although I had quote-unquote white Jewish friends, I went to Israel and came back with trinkets and gifts and things and souvenirs. Even when I was at their house with their parents and their family, they knew that I was aware of the fact that black people had created Judaism. And this is the 80s. So I'm like, well, when did this become something that we can't talk about? When did it become taboo? It's very interesting, because I don't have much of a recollection before that of not being able to say, so that was interesting. And of course, I was able to, you know, speak freely about the many, many, many dark-skinned black North African people, or African people, period, that I saw there that would claim themselves to be of the Judaic faith. Very interesting. However, tonight, and I'm hoping he will come in his timely fashion of when he's supposed to, but I'm going to kick start this off. Stated before, I'm very honored to have Chief Chasing Horse of the Lakota Nation as my guest tonight. Y'all know I don't even usually have guests, so this is a very special episode of the Black Alice in Wonderland radio show. The Lakota are a very vast, of course they had higher numbers before, but they're very bright, very beautiful, very loving, but they were one of the most tenacious groups during the time of European colonialism that fought to keep their land, especially in the Black Hills of North America. They were not going without a fight. And in many instances, the United States government came with bayonets and what have you and would massacre them, or take great numbers of them, kill a chief here, kill a chief there. But they still managed to survive and thrive. And I've done a lot of research on them. But very tenacious people were doing everything they could to maintain their lands and their way of life. Now, during the late 1800s, into the middle of the 20th century, And this, again, will give you an idea of how numerative Native Americans were in America. Hello? We're talking about over 100,000 children being taken from their parents and brought to industrial learning centers and schools, many of whom were attached to the Catholic Church. And they were forced to be educated in these boarding schools. Many of the children never even came back. Unfortunately, many of the children were tortured and killed. And this is something that's not really spoken about too much. But we had agreements with Canada to take and house these children. And the campaign, the motto of the campaign was to kill the Indian and save the man. So, of course, immediately they would cut the children's hair, especially the boys. They let the girls keep their hair, but they would cut their hair, dress them in Europeanized clothes. The children were forbidden to speak their languages. They were forbidden to indulge in any aspect of their culture. And if they were caught speaking their native tongue or making a doll or doing something that had reference to their Native American heritage, they were tortured. And this was kind of heavy because thousands upon thousands of children were, some of them were tortured and lived. And there are accounts of what they went through and what they had to endure. Many of them, of course, have had to seek psychological counseling because the traumas that they experienced were so horrific and so cruel. Aside from being away from your mother and father, aside from being stolen and taken away from your parents, basically kidnapped and put thousands of miles away in an institution that does not acknowledge your culture whatsoever. So if it doesn't acknowledge your culture, how much is it really acknowledging you? And in order for you to be correct, you're getting beaten up. And there are accounts of children being thrown out of two-story windows, children being thrown down steps and elevator shafts, children being stabbed, children being physically and sexually abused. For years. So last year, the remains of more than 1,000 Indigenous children were found at a former residential school in Canada. Unmarked graves that may hold the bodies of more than 160 Indigenous children were found this month on Penalakut Island, previously known as Cooper Island, in British Columbia, Canada. This article was written and published on July 13th of 2021, and is written by Mindy Weisberger. Representatives of the Penalakut tribe found the graves on the grounds of the former Cooper Island Industrial School, part of a network of mandatory state-run boarding schools for Indigenous children in Canada that subjected children to traumatic family separation, cultural erasure, abuse, and so forth. So family, as I say that there is much that needs to be uncovered, there is much that needs to be uncovered, and I would like for everyone to please join me in welcoming the amazing human being, the chief of the great Lakota Nation, Chief Chasing Horse. Chief Chasing Horse, are you there? Your line is open. 702-833, your line is open.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Peace and light to you. Aho.
First of all, I want to begin by saying Mitaku Oyase. Chante yuha na pech yuza pelo una chante ta wopila tanka ichijapi. I want to say all my relations, I greet you all with a hearty handshake from the heart of a family. I am sitting here with my Hasani, my companion, my wife of 47 years, good-hearted woman, and I want to thank you for allowing us to be on this program to voice many of our concerns. And I want to also thank the Queen for allowing us to be on this talk show. And we send our prayers and our greetings to all of you listening around the world. And we have entered into a treaty of the Circle of Life with the Ethiopian World Federation Incorporated. And I want to thank Dr. Wilburn for creating this alliance in these times, in this day and age, in which a great understanding and a great alliance must be created among the indigenous people of the world and the black people of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to also say that me and my wife here were directly experienced, if not multi-generational trauma from the boarding school eras in this country when we were not allowed to speak our language. We were punished by force for speaking our language, for growing our hair, for practicing our own traditions. So throughout history, one must educate themselves to the atrocities that had taken place here, and reparations, and the social justice that we seek, and now in the international community.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we have documented evidence now. We have archaeological evidence of these atrocities.
Right.
And so we want to present that in a formal way to educate the world and to these events that took place that people are still those generational effects of cultural genocide that took place.
Yes.
And so we are in alliance with the Federation to bring this social justice to light. And we are calling now for the abrogation, the dissolvement of the paper bulls in 1492,
mm-hmm.
in the Doctrine of Discovery, so-called Doctrine of Discovery, gave the so-called right to take our lands and to exploit our resources. And so we are today the great Iron of the Lakota Nation. I am chief of the Tashunka Okua Tioshpe of the Sichanghu Lakota Oyate. And we have direct ancestors that were affected by this boarding school that were recently brought back to our homeland for reburial. And so there is awareness that's growing today as we create this alliance among many indigenous and minority nations throughout history, and the descendants of the slaves, and many who were oppressed. So we still suffer the generational oppression from these effects that took place and which were never justified. And so I have also, perhaps online with me, one of the Native American archaeologists whose name is Ben Rod, who is also a spiritual leader and a pipe Sundance leader among my people. And I've invited him to say also a few words on the, he was on the site there in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, where there, it was a prior military installation turned into a boarding school in the 1800s. Where 300 of our people were uncovered there and buried there. And nine of them were returned to for reburial in our homeland. And one of them is my direct, I am direct descendant. And so if we would like to invite maybe our fellow Ben Rod to say a few words as well, and tonight on this talk show, and as the awareness grows throughout the communities, throughout the world, of what had taken place here in these in the boarding schools that were under control of the Catholic Church and the military of the United States.
I thank you so very much. Thank you, first of all, for being on with us tonight, Chief Chasing Horse, you and your wife. I definitely want to open up the line to your historian friend that we can speak to, the archaeologist for sure, but I just want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. I myself, I'm also a historian, and in doing a lot of research on Native American heritage and as well as the African presence within Native American heritage for decades, as well as even being abreast of the Carlisle School in Pennsylvania and other schools throughout Canada and this nation that unfortunately committed major atrocities against Native American children. And it was done for such a very long time, as I mentioned previously, from the middle end of the 1800s all the way to 1970-something in some cases, and in some cases something about 1980-something, just way too long. If you can give me the area code and the first three digits of the archaeologist's phone number, I can open up their line.
Okay. As soon as I'm going to try to do.
I have a nice amount of numbers in the queue, so I'm just wanting to hone in on the correct one to open.
Okay, it's from Wisconsin, 605 is the area code.
Okay, is it 605-393? 605-393. Welcome to the Black Alice in Wonderland radio show. I am your host, Queen Amina. Nice to be with you tonight.
Yes, hello. This is Ben Rod. I've introduced myself in a way with you of the Lakota people, and when you translate my name, it's the eagle that goes first. And as I said, my English name is Ben Rod. I'm a archaeologist, yes, Native American, one of the first country. I'm still active as an archaeologist. For this year is 45 years I've been in conducting archaeology. And as my kola, Joe Chasing Horse said, was very involved in the process of bringing back the children to the Sichango Oyate, the Burnt Thigh People Nation, Rosebud, commonly called in South Dakota. And it was a long process. It was a 5-year process of negotiation, counter offers, et cetera. And why I say that is because when we dealt with the United States Army at that time, with their legal counsel and their command administration, they were very adamant that they would give us 2 at a time and extend it out over years. And we said, no, we're not going to, we do not want to leave any of our children behind, our ancestors, ancestral children, because I had to eventually, by the third time they made this offer, I wrote the Secretary of the Army a letter, and it made it to him, actually. And I said, why this issue keeps arising about us only coming after a couple of our children that are there out of what we thought at the time were 15, and then eventually there was the number was 11. But I told him, I said, very premise of valor that you follow and process and protocol in your army is you never leave a comrade behind. And I said, you learn that from us. And I was very forthright to him. You learn that from the native people. We didn't leave our dead behind on the field. And I said, we want to bring all of our children home, all of our relatives home at once, one time.
Exactly.
And out of the 11, unfortunately, 2 of them, they did not know where they were at. The Army has very dispersed records. Some are in the Pentagon, some are in different colleges or places where their records were stored. And in the end, we were only able to bring 9 home, but 9 is a good number in the sense that while we didn't get them all, and I'm hoping that the one who has my position now at Rosebud, I'm hoping that the other 2 are being pursued so that they can come, they will be able to come home. But the lengthy process that we had to go through was terrible. When we talk about bureaucracy and we talk about process and these kind of issues are, in one sense, unprecedented, but yet they mm-hmm. are also old. It's an old process for the Army. When they would go and retrieve their dead from Vietnam, and sometimes even from places in Europe after the mm-hmm. Second World War, where soldiers were killed and buried. So they have their process, and the terrible thing about this for us in this country is that the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act is not followed by the Army.
Mm-hmm.
They have a specific process that they follow, and they applied that to us. It is one that they use and follow as they go after to retrieve the soldiers from different lands where we have had activities, actions, wars, etc. So they made it very difficult for us, extremely. The very question that is at the core of this, in the sense of these boarding schools that were directly under the Office of Indian Affairs under the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's different than the ones that we speak to about the churches and or benevolent societies of affiliated with a church.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of those I'm dealing with right now, one in Iowa and one in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is that they are not bound by NAGPRA, and that's that Native American Graves Protection Act. Now,
mm-hmm.
here was the issue that we brought to not only the commanders within the colonels and generals and such within the service, was that, are you saying that you own these skeletal remains? You know, there's many issues here that where it was a matter of ownership. And when we deal with the extremely difficult history between the nations, the Red Nations and this government and the churches, where originally we were only deemed to be a quarter human by the churches
mm-hmm.
in the Doctrine of Discovery. And eventually we were deemed to be half human, and then finally three quarters human, and then finally we were fully human, so to speak. But it's ownership. Our children were still treated as our ancestral children. These skeletal remains were still treated as a property. Now, property of who? When I get very emotional about this, because I get very angry because of the way that our children were specimens. They're like a specimen in a museum. They're property, and it was very disconcerting when I was there for 24 straight days. And I mean straight. We didn't take a day off. Well, we forced them on one day. That was the celebration that happens on the 26th of June with the victory over General mm-hmm. Custer at the Little Bighorn. And that is for each Native American to make their own decision. But sometimes, especially in particular among the Lakota, everyone takes the day off because of the celebration of that victory. So we forced it on the Army in that sense, because they continued to work every day. And for 24 straight days, we were taking those and exhuming the children, And a forensic osteologist was analyzing them on site in a mobile lab. And here's the most horrendous thing in my mind. Even as a scientist, I wonder at just how terrible this atrocity is and was. There was not one grave that was exhumed in the boxes that were, and those boxes were 17 inches by 8 inches by 16 inches wide. And they held the remains of the whole human, we're supposed to, in other words, the bones of a human. But not one of those boxes that was exhumed held a full skeleton. The one that is the was most intact had 60% of the bones were there, and it was of a young girl who was 7 years old. The rest were some, in one case, there were only three bones that could be identified as belonging to the particular persons whose name was on the headstone.
Could this be but all the rest, a lot of them were in a mass grave?
Pardon?
Could this be because some of them were in a mass grave and then removed from a mass grave into separate containers?
No. What has happened is that we, from our research that we conducted from Rosebud through a man by the name of Peter Gipp, who happens to be a Brit married in to one of our relatives on the Rosebud. He was my assistant, and I had him doing the research in the Tribal Historic Preservation Office. And we surmise from our research that there had been a total of 5 different cemeteries at Carlisle. Now, they were moved multiple times, 2 of them in particular, that one that died in 1880 and the other one died in 1881, had been moved a total of 5 times. And the others, successively over the years, had been moved 2 and 3 times. So one of the terrible things in this sense is that when we exhumed one young woman who supposedly was supposed to be a young woman of about 17 years of age, when we opened her box, there was actually the bone of a cow in there.
Oh, Lord.
Now, the west side of Carlisle, it was at one time, was part of a farm. It was part of a dairy. And they had cattle, of course, dairy, and they somehow this bone ended up in that box with that young woman's few bones that were in there and her skull. And each one, at least, I can say this, each one at least had their skull within the box.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very happy to see that at least. However, there was one of the exhumed boxes that had the remains of 3 separate individuals, 3 different individuals, bones that were not wherever they were supposed to be. 2 of the individuals that were in there, they were supposed to be in other graves. So I don't want to, their record keeping was horrendous in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not conscious, or they chose not to be conscious of the sanctity of the children's being and their remains. They were abusive in a sense. So there was a lot of emotion that was involved in this, and in particular with the day of the transfer, when Secretary Holland, and whom we met with prior to that morning, and others that came as dignitaries, and the senators and et cetera, who came to be at the exchange ceremony. In other words, the army is exchanging them back to the hands of the Lakota Sichangu people. So issue, as you have mentioned, in particular on the Canadian side, they're ahead of us, so to speak, because we have so many schools here that were, as Mr. Chasing Horse said, Joe said, they were church led. There was benevolent societies that were affiliated with churches, but not directly funded by the churches. And here's what it boils down to. In the end, on one level, for these benevolent societies and for the church, it was money. It was money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's they were able to qualify, quote, for appropriations that the Army and then later on the Department of the Interior could allocate to the various institutions. So it was about money. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's how terrible this is.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to end this with one thing to make you aware, to make all the world aware. In 79, when Mr. Pratt, Richard Pratt, Colonel Pratt, then eventually General, Brigadier General Pratt, when he sought to start Carlisle, he wasn't able to get monies from the Army per se itself. Now, this is a little known part of what will eventually come out from the research that we have conducted and others have conducted at in Pennsylvania for us. The monies that were used to begin Carlisle as an institution actually were Indian, what we just call Indian monies. Now, many of the tribes in their treaty obligation or treaties agreed for a monetary settlement per se. I'm not going to call it a settlement, but they were said that they would be given, oh, 50,000, 100,000, 60,000, 80,000, whatever, 200,000 or something like this for their lands, and so many beeves or cattle, so much pots and pans and et cetera. I mean, plows, whatever. I mean, I laugh at it in a way of how ludicrous it was. But the monies were placed in an Indian bank, per se, within the Office of Indian Affairs. So the actual monies that were given to Mr. Pratt to start Carlisle actually came from the Osage Nation for their settlement in Oklahoma. So that's where the monies came from to start that very institution that led to so many of the atrocities and the traumas that Mr. Chasing Horse has spoken about among our people. It was our own money, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not Osage, and I cannot speak for them, but I do know that the monies that were given to Mr. Pratt came from their settlement. And in a sense, that's like doubly something that is atrocious, because they took our money, they took our lands, they gave us money, then they took it back, and then they did this harm to us. Well, wait a minute, you know, something very convoluted about this. There's something very insidious. Look at it today, and I think of that time, and as I witnessed the first box come from the ground at Carlisle and saw the condition of those bones within those, what bones were in those, some of the boxes. It was just, I can only say that it was rage. That's all I can say within myself. I had to hold myself accountable, though, to not lash out. But as Mr. Chasing Horse said, to look at the spiritual side of things and what has happened. And I prayed very, very hard that day, extremely hard, because of seeing how these children had been treated. Now, there was no trauma that we know of at this point to any of the bones in the sense of breakages, et cetera. We did not see that. I'll have to at least say that as far as the forensics analysis and et cetera, there was no signs of beating and or breakages, like I said, about any of the bones or the skulls. So, but be that as it is, and I look ahead now and hope that justice in the end will come for our peoples. Mr. Chasing Horse said reparations, et cetera. And then we have to ask, what is a reparation and for the life of a child? What will there be? I don't know. I don't know how that type of settlement will come, hopefully someday for the descendants. But it must be placed, it will be something that will need to happen. Because, as he said, we're still feeling the effects in our families from that time. And they call them lost generations, so to speak. The discontinuity, the discontinuance of tradition, language, customs, values, belief. All these things that were affected by that era of the boarding school. I'm a boarding school survivor. I graduated from Chilocco Indian School in Oklahoma, which is one of the worst, in the system. Bureau of Indian Affairs.
From Oklahoma?
Yeah, I'm from the Potawatomi people, but also Choctaw, Cherokee. Chickasaw and Lakota. So it's that's another thing that the boarding schools did, of course, because when I said insidious, when you think about it, you know, young people are young people, no matter, they're just young people are that this way in all cultures. And as part of the insidious plan was to bring all of our different nations into one place, such as a boarding school, and love knows no bounds, you know. So you would not be marrying or finding a mate with within your own tribe there, or you might have, In many cases, there was choosing of individuals from another tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, I'm Potawatomi on my father's side mainly, and Choctaw on my mother's side, but also the Chickasaw and the Cherokee, and the Lakota on my dad's side. But my saying this is that if you look at the way that what was happening in a broader scheme and broader scale, what was happening was to in a very straightforward manner, having us break down our blood lineages. And saying that is because the way that the Bureau of Indian Affairs now would quantify our blood. So we have a blood quantity that we must meet to be enrolled in a particular tribe. However, on mine, I have enough blood on one from one tribe, or actually both tribes, that I could be enrolled in two different places. But I can, by law of the federal government, I can only be enrolled in one. Okay? But mm-hmm. Look at what the boarding schools did. You had young people choosing mates from another tribe, but in the insidiousness of the way that this system worked and was designed to do was to erode the amount of blood quantum that each person would have from the young man and the young woman having children. And then their children would go to the boarding school, and they would further erode the blood
mm-hmm.
quantum.
Mm-hmm.
So that soon there would be no, quote, blood of sufficient blood for you to be called Native American or to be enrolled in a tribe. So if you look at the greater picture of the boarding schools, you see what was happening. You mm-hmm. see what we were designed to do, and that was to eliminate us. And if you know Colonel Pratt's adage that he used was to kill the Indian and save the man.
Oh, yeah, and save the man. Mm-hmm.
That was his, he coined that. And then the other ministers, the other church peoples and benevolent societies, et cetera, they picked up on that same adage, and that's what they used to justify what they were going
mm-hmm.
to do. So we were able to get those nine young men and women back, and children. I'm sorry, I got to add
mm-hmm.
that in there. Back to Rosebud, and they are buried in our veterans cemetery on the Rosebud Reservation, so that the veterans who were warriors who couldn't defend them or weren't able to defend them in life, but now they can defend them in death. So the
yeah.
spirits of our Akichita, our soldiers, our warriors, are there to guard them now. And they're buried with the veterans. So I know there's so much that I could keep rattling on about, I'm saying. But I want the world to know that this atrocity, as it has happened, we have to now find our the ones that are still out there in the various locations where these schools were at. And there were over
mm-hmm.
300 and, let me see, 27 of them. Or 57.
Of the schools.
57, I think. Yes,
mm-hmm.
schools. But like I said, they were not all governmental. They were church and,
right.
and benevolent societies and et cetera. So there's a lot of our people scattered in many directions, and they as part of this process is that they took them as far as they could away from their homelands,
yes,
so that they could not run home to escape.
Mm-hmm. Parents wouldn't be able to get them either.
And so, you know, it was designed. I mean, the insidious, and I've used that word several times, but it doesn't encapsulate just how masterminded this was. I'm trying to think of mm-hmm. another word. I don't know. Word that captures this.
You're very correct. It's very interesting how the parallels run through the Native American community, the African American community, and of course the Black Native Americans who were also transported far away and renamed as Negro and colored and no longer could have any association to their tribe or their group or anything. It's just very amazing how diabolical, I'll use that word.
That's the good word, diabolical. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that word, but yes, that's a very appropriate word for this. We're hopeful, of course.
Okay.
And that through Secretary Holland and through the committee that she has established and that appropriations according to the politics with inside the Beltway there in D.C., we're hoping that there will be appropriations for the committee that she's established and
mm-hmm.
the task force and et cetera, that we will be able to continue to pursue where our loved ones, our ancestral loved ones lay and bring them home.
Indeed.
Back to their own homeland where their ancestors came from. So anyway, so
you've been charged with a very special task.
Right. So I'm hoping I've been able to.
In this journey.
Yes. I hope I've been able to at least add a little bit to the conversation for the world's peoples and for the peoples of this land to understand the history of this democracy, as it is called,
mm-hmm.
or this republic, whatever it titles itself to be.
Indeed.
I hope that they can do their own separate research and look and see what I and Mr. Chasing Horse have said for themselves. I kind of find it kind of strange on one level that in the last election prior to, not the last one, but the one before with Mr. Trump,
mm-hmm.
that there were 56% of the people in the United States who did not believe that the Holocaust had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find that as a Gallup poll percentage kind of horrendous in that sense of you have all this information at your fingertips and yet you choose to deny that some event of history has happened.
Right.
When it
right.
is there for you and others to learn about commonly. But 56%. I couldn't believe it. It was astonishing. So this
yes,
is the reason I'm
asking. It's propaganda.
Right.
You know, the propaganda has definitely found ways to increase its power, and it doesn't have to be correct. It's just propaganda.
Right. Exactly. And some will look at this as propaganda or something along that line from us as Native people. But we do not speak any untruth of this. The truth is there. It's in congressional record. It's in the national archives.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. If you take the time to look for it
mm-hmm.
and you find it, and that's what I'm encouraging. I hope for other people to do if they wish to know truthfully for themselves on that level. what Mr. Chasing Horse and I have spoken to, that it is a truth on this land.
Indeed.
And what
yes.
this land was supposedly supposed to be as
Indeed.
A republic and a democracy. So I want to thank you, though, for having the opportunity to say a few words and maybe a lot of
No, I appreciate you so much. Thank you again. Can you please state your name again for the listening audience?
It's Ben Rod. Yeah.
I really appreciate you coming on tonight, and I'm exceptionally pleased that Chief Chasing Horse had you come in as an archaeologist and as a researcher. The importance of having tangible evidence and being aware of specific incidents and time frames in history is very, very key. I'm the daughter of a African American historian who comes from the Arawak lineage of Jamaica. My husband
right.
is Cherokee and Shinnecock.
Right.
I have best friends that are Choctaw, Blackfeet, even Seminole. And my experience has been that our knowledge of history and what we've done and the things that have been done to us, it is evident. It exists, as we say. Like you said, you have information at your fingertips now with your phone. You don't have to go to an elaborate university to learn about. You can purchase your own books if you want to. I mean, we have an extensive library in our home because we realize and know how important history actually is. And as we see certain things happening in modern day history, what's happening now, how individuals are seeking to discredit certain other groups of people from belonging to specific nationalities. I mean, it's interesting when, if you're a real researcher and you know history and you go way, way back, I mean, way back as in like BC, you can see where we are today. You can see where the lie is. You can see how blatant the lie is when the previous history is there, the information is there, you know. So
right.
I commend you on the work that you're doing because it's not necessarily glee-filled work
right.
to go to these different locations and not only uncover these graves and these bodies, but to then be rejected in your request to transport them back home, for them to be looked at as a property, for them to
right.
be disassembled and not even in their wholeness as a skeleton. I know that it has probably been very unsettling for you to complete this work. You know, so I commend you again because the raw truth is hard.
Yes.
The raw truth is rough.
Yeah. Very
you
much
know,
so.
I commend you just for doing the work that you're doing and for uncovering this vast amount of information on these beautiful, now unforgotten souls.
Right. Yes. It's a, you know, when it'll be beyond our years, Mr. Chasing Horse, myself, it'll be maybe another two generations before things are reconciled. So, but that's okay. The journey has begun. So,
yeah.
Now,
but it will happen.
And it will happen in one form or another. But I just hope that people will look for themselves, seek the knowledge themselves, and.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
You know, it's so important. I always talk about how important history is. People do like to say, oh, well, you know, science is important and technology, blah, 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 blah. But I'm a firm believer in knowing that you can't really know where you're going if you don't know where you've been.
Exactly.
And as humanity and as original indigenous people to this country, of course, Canada, of course, Central America, South America. I mean, our diaspora really is worldwide. It's just amazing to me how other individuals that seem to want to be in control will hold on to a lie.
Yes.
They'll take it to the grave.
Yes, they will.
You know, so those of us who live in truth, we have to push.
Yeah. It's a sad reflection of our inhumanity to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, and to the disparities of untruths that we will incorporate and live as if they are a truth and cease to seek whether what we understand or think is a truth is truly a truth. We don't tend to do that, reflect nor meditate upon those things.
Mm-hmm.
We take them as it was written, that it was said, that it was expounded upon in some treatise. And so therefore it has to be true.
Right.
I'm an archaeologist. I deal in theory.
Exactly.
People think, well, this must be true, what he says. I said, understand that what I am saying to you is theory. Now be careful. We do not know the full stories of the artifacts and the cultures that we look at. We only have parts of the material side. We do not know of their other customs and beliefs and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We only surmise to know and theorize upon.
Right.
So others will look at it and say, well, no, that you have the scientific principles that you follow behind us. Well, yeah, but that still does not say this is the truth.
Right.
You know, be very careful. But I laugh at it because how ludicrous our society has become with all this vast amount of information in these iPhones and these Androids and these, oh my God, everything is
it's
there
amazing.
At our fingertips.
Yeah, no, it's amazing because as we've received more technology, but the masses seem to get dumber.
Yeah. Yeah,
they won't research,
true.
They won't read it, they won't look for it, they're not going to spend the day or several days researching information and material. They won't do it. They've definitely been victims of the spell.
Right, right.
You know.
But I want to thank you for allowing to have this time, and I know that Joe probably has some other, Mr. Chasing Horse has some other words he might want to share, so I think it would be good to have him. Perhaps he's probably thought of things while I was talking, and I'm pretty sure he would want to share some of his thoughts. Julia.
Well, thank you so much again for being with us tonight. I really appreciate having you on the show tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, and again, I commend you on all the work that you're doing, and I wish you much success in all of your endeavors in your journey.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
You're welcome.
Mm.
Chief, you're there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Yes, we can.
I want
this
to just...
This has been
just
a very impactful episode.
Oh, yes, it has been. And I want to thank my colleague, my longtime ally. He has been a great information to many of the Native tribes in working not only on that level, but in the spiritual realm as well. A great number of years, 40-some years that I have known Mr. Ben Rod, and I really want to thank him for giving his input here. And I just also, you know, want to say too that many, many atrocities that have taken place against indigenous people. But there are some, like the Tashuka Okua Tioshpe, the chasing horse. We are the one of the last now. We have overcome just about everything they had forced upon us. And yet we have maintained our sacred hoop.
Mm-hmm.
We have maintained our language. We have maintained our ceremonies. We have maintained our cultural values. We have maintained our sovereignty. And this is what's in our cultural identity. And this is what they tried to take away from us through all, through starvation, massacres, you name it, broken treaties, diseases. And yet there are some clans, some families that have prevailed. And these are the survivors. And we are now, in a way, as foretold by our ancestors, that, and even foretold by a great man, by the spiritual leader by the name of Crazy Horse,
mm-hmm.
Who was one of the only chiefs to defeat the United States government at the Little Bighorn. But he foretold a time of seven generations when the whole earth shall be made one circle again.
Mm-hmm.
That all walks of life, all from all corners of the world shall gather here from in this place you call America today. But he said they will gather under the sacred tree of life. And so through this technology that we have, which I call whispers in the wind.
Mm.
We are voices in the wind. And as we send our voices out, you know, there is a positive unification that can take place.
Mm-hmm.
Besides all of the confusion and the misunderstandings that are being broadcasted or promoted. And so the Chasing Horse family, Tashuka Okua Tioshpe, we are bringing real solutions to the table, so to speak, for to bring about this Wolakota, we call it in our language.
Mm-hmm.
It's a word we have known for centuries, and it was a concept in which there was made a peace between families, individuals, between nations. And this was a powerful tool that was handed down since the beginning of time, that the Lakota people were going to possess this wisdom be able to utilize their resources. For the Lakota people have balanced the budget in this country three times already.
Mm.
And the first one was in 1851 when they took millions and millions and millions of acres of land and they distributed it among their industries. The second time was when they discovered gold in the Black Hills, of the sacred Black Hills of our, the heart of our nation. They took that gold and balanced their budget. And then in the early 1900s, they exploited the oil, and it changed their life, their way of life forever.
Mm.
But they took that and they balanced their budget once again with Native American resources. And so there's time coming again, a fourth time. This country is trillions and trillions of dollars in debt.
Hmm. Yes.
We're going to need that upon our unborn children. And the children are going to, unborn children are going to look to their grandfathers, to these times, and they're going to say, well, how come you didn't do anything about it? You had all the money. You had all the science. You had all the resources. You had all the power to make a life for the next seven generations. How come you didn't do it, Grandpa? How come you didn't do it, Grandma? At the end of the day, history is going to tell. And so we are doing all that we can to create that awareness. So there will be clean water. There will be fresh air. There will be soil, the nourishment for food for our children.
Mm-hmm.
There will be cultural values left after this so-called democracy or republic. There will be some sort of human rights and human values. Every child that's born on this planet should be born with the right to grow their own food.
Yes.
To grow their own.
Mm-hmm.
They should be born with that world human right. But today we live in a material world where greed and selfishness motivate these societies. And there's nothing going to be left for the future. All the resources have been depleted. What are we going to turn to next when they run out of oil?
Mm-hmm.
So these are the longer range solutions that we are bringing to the table. And so we live our light in the light of seven generations to come. And who's got the plan? Who's got the, that's going to take us? Now is the time we have to bring all sources of knowledge together to see what life we can make for our children.
Yes.
And so I want to thank you for allowing this way to present our voice to those who will listen, but not only listen, but will take action that will pick up your phone and call a friend and communicate and take action. So I want to thank you at this time again. Although I want to sing a little song for the spirit of all those little children.
Please.
That are all over this land here that we walk upon. The roots of the tree of life is rising through the concrete. It's cracking the very foundation of this country. And that tree is gonna rise again. The tree of life.
Oh,
While they're watching and all, oh, my God. Thank you, all my relations, for listening. And may the Creator, the Great Spirit, be with you and bless you and your families. Ahu.
Ahu. Thank you so very much, Chief. Everybody, that was the incomparable Chief Chasing Horse of the Lakota Nation. Ah, they are making great strides, and they are in the process of gathering together as many of the skeletal remains of children throughout this nation that were put into these schools and institutions from Canada all the way all across America, over 300 and some odd schools that Native American children were basically kidnapped and taken to. And so they are exposing a lot of what most people are not aware of. It has been more than an honor for me tonight to have Chief Chasing Horse, as well as the architect, Ben Roth. Thank you so much for enlightening our audience. I do have dedicated followers who listen every week, and I know that last week when I spoke with Dr. Winborn and he asked me if I would like to have you on, I jumped at the opportunity. I'm so grateful that you were able to come on tonight and just not only break down what's happening, but also share with us the plan and how we make solutions to move forward so that we can really change and our nation can be whole again. I feel like we're very splintered. There are a lot of things happening, of course, in the political world that are absolutely insane. And we need for truth to prevail. And truth is always truth. I talk about this all the time. The truth is the truth. It is important for us to have. It is important for us to move with and to work with. And when we fail to do that, that's how trouble happens. And we've all gotten into a lot of trouble because of money and other material things. Other individuals have taken control of the historical narrative of this country and what has really happened here. And so, again, I'm very, very happy. I'm very happy because I really wanted to help to expose some of the things that we've been plagued with for over 100 years in terms of the neocolonialism, the European neocolonialism of America, and what that has done to all of us as indigenous people, the damage has been done, but we're still here. And as long as we're here, we can still move in the right direction to achieve what it is that we really want to achieve. So I'm very grateful. And I thank Dr. James Winborn for not only allowing me this platform on the Neo Nation Radio Network, but for putting me in touch with amazing, beautiful souls who are doing the work that is necessary in order for our world to change for the better. It just overwhelms me. It makes me feel very gratified because I am one who not only seeks the truth and will continue to seek truth and do research and read and watch lectures and interviews and different exposés. I will do that work to bring forth truth. I will continue to utilize my personal library, which is extensive, to bring forth that truth and to help free the minds and souls of human beings. We have a lot of work to do, There are a lot of people out here doing great work. And as long as we stick together and we move in the same direction, we can achieve anything. We can achieve the bliss that we're seeking. We can definitely bring forth the truth that is needed. We can do so much when we come together. So, you know, support the Lakota Nation, support different nations and tribes that you may be associated with. Like I said, for my family, it's Arawak and Shinnecock and Cherokee. But those of us who are native to this land have a serious story to tell. And so I just look forward to hearing more. I look forward to getting more research and more findings done by Ben Ra and the work that Chief Chasing Horse is doing with the Ethiopian World Federation is historical. It is groundbreaking. It is very, very important work. And so I commend the two of you also on the journey that you're taking together to liberate and free all of our people. And like we always say, you know, let the truth set you free. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to be. So I think, let me see, I'm looking in my queue. I think I have, let me see. One second. I want to check something out real quick. But I hope that my listening audience has really had their fill tonight. You know, we don't get to have these types of conversations every day. And, you know, it was just fantastic to have an actual archaeologist on to discuss his findings and just think of the audacity that this government has with regard to different people and with regard to even deceased people. Think of that level of audacity when he's trying to have these bodies released and they're being held as a property. That's heavy. And that's now. So I still have a few minutes. I see Dr. Winborn. I want to open up your line, Doc. 973-640. Alamo, are you with me?
Yeah. Greetings, everyone. I'm here.
Greetings, Doc. Thank you for putting all this together tonight. Thank you so much.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine. I know that we were working on a few things with Chief Chasing Horse and the Lakota Nation. And I know that some of the subject matters are very similar and dear to your heart. And I thought that it would be a good idea if we could bring the two entities together for one night and specifically to talk about these atrocities that have happened. And just listening to Brother Ben Arad, the archaeologist, and his story and his plight as to what they discovered. Mm-hmm. And the process of trying to get everyone back is just eye-opening and mind-boggling.
Yes.
And then to hear him describe how they tried to dilute and confuse and destroy the bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
Destroying the history of the people is the same tactic.
Yep.
That these people use on everybody.
Yeah, yep.
It's like they have a manual for destruction, and they
mm-hmm.
follow this manual very closely.
To the T.
And so we're grateful for them coming on and sharing that information. I'm not going to take up a whole lot of time. I do know that on the line, one of the people that's inspirational and instrumental in pulling these things together so that we can have these conversations and have brought the Lakota tribe and the chief to my attention
is Ross Lazarus, our minister of our foreign affairs minister. I believe mm-hmm. he's on. I would like for him to have a word or two. I think this is number that I see. You see a 912 number? 441. We want to let him in if that's okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to find 912-441.
Yes. Yeah, I see. I'm gonna act like that. I don't know that I have the power, and I'm gonna accidentally open his mic if you don't mind.
What's his name again?
Ross Lazarus. Ross Lazarus, okay. are you there with us?
Yes, 912-441. Your line is open.
Yes, give thanks. I'm right here with you, Dr. Wimbaugh. I would just like to give thanks to the Queen for hosting and allowing this message to be aired out. These are the things that we have to do. We have to provide these communications and allow our people to hear the messages that the regular media may not put before us.
Indeed.
Even in the essence of this, I think most of us realize now that the Pope's visit to Canada was not by accident. It was pretty mm-hmm. much on these basis of these grounds. And we've watched after that the Vatican has removed its assets and brought them back into their jurisdiction behind their wall. So maybe clearly there's a sign of something going on. But I would like to give thanks, but I would love if I can read just the first part of the Treaty of the Circle of Life. The Treaty of the Circle of Life, it is just that. It is a treaty where each nation of people who come under this treaty will not stop with the Ethiopian World Federation and the Lakota. There are more indigenous tribes, more indigenous nations, from the Americas to Africa that will sign in as a movement of the collective of the people, because the voice of the peoples of this world have not been heard. And they have been overrun by corporate political influences. And the suffering of the people has gone on shallow ears as people find a way to make riches off of the suffering, to set up systems to gamble on how long will the suffering lead to a poverty mindset where we turn to crime. And then how many people can you lock up after that?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been put in like a rat's trap. And until we as the people choose to undo that and stand on that, these conditions will not change amongst us. We will be subject to genetic annihilation
mm-hmm.
So that the history of the world can be erased. This is just the reality that we're witnessing to on many levels. And so in the Treaty of the Circle of Life, it is a call for respect of life of all people. And as we were doing this works, the Chief Chasing Horse had read to us the prophecy of Chief Crazy Horse, who had prophesied that 7 generations from him, there would be a unification call for all 4 corners of the world and the people to start restoring and healing and bringing this. So when he had read that, and he said, you know, my son, he is the 7th generation, Chief Chasing Horse Jr., which we signed the treaty with, who is the chief of chiefs. And we were like, oh, so we are really walking in a moment of prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And it it changed the rhythm and the vision of understanding that there is a very great works before us. So in the Treaty of the Circle of Life, the preamble says, we, the people of the Circle of Life, in order to form a more perfect union for human life, for human rights, social justice, sustainability, and the right to our indigenous cultures, religions, and sacred lands, under the first governing law of the Circle of Life, which is respect for spirit and all. The Treaty of the Circle of Life is a collective of nations, tribes, and people that have been enslaved, colonized, and terrorized under the Papal Bull doctrines, who now come together under collective security to protect the Circle of Life from such acts ever happening again in any form. This is a treaty of collective security to give a voice to the voiceless in the unrepresented nations. So just in that, I'd like to thank you for being a part of giving a voice to the voiceless. Give thanks.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Give thanks. Give thanks. Thank you so much for sharing that as well. I'm definitely seeking to educate more of our people on the objectives and what the Ethiopian World Federation is doing, as well as what the Lakota Nation is doing. It's very, very important for us to come together. And so I thank you for sharing that. This has been a very impactful show. Again, Dr. Winborn, thank you so much. I know that my listening audience has definitely learned some very important information tonight. And I also hope that this beckons them to continue to do research, to study, and to obtain as much knowledge as possible. The more we know, the more we grow. And it's so important because everybody always says, you know, we can't do better until we know better. So I thank you so much, Doc. It has really been a very mind-blowing night tonight.
Give thanks. Give thanks.
Indeed. Indeed. You know, and we had a lot of people on tonight, so I really hope everyone enjoyed everything that they received tonight. I also hope that we will be encouraged to come together, truly come together. We are one human family. Many of us are indigenous to this land and don't know it. It's important for us to be one and to come together. So I give thanks to everyone listening. I give thanks to my husband for supporting me and always allowing me so much extra time to research and bring forth material to the family. I look forward actually to keeping up with Chief Chasing Horse and Brother Ben Ra and the other brother that just spoke. I really look forward to keeping in touch with you because we have work to do, and it's important for us as well to stick together and to have conversation and to commune with each other so that we can really, really not make the same mistakes again or be taken advantage of in the ways that we have been. So prayerfully, through more knowledge, through coming together, we can make these positive changes for our future and for the children of our future. Our children are depending on us, and if we fail right now in this time frame, we can hang it up. So let's keep pushing. Let's keep growing. Each one teach one, each one reach one. Let's do this work together, family. We have each other. Let's make it happen. So I thank everybody. Again, I thank my special guest tonight, Chief Chasing Horse of the Lakota Nation. I would like to thank Brother Ben Ra, the archaeologist, who's doing physical work and serious research on all these lost souls and these children who were abused and I'll go so far as to say murdered in these schools across America and in Canada. And again, I want to thank Dr. Winborn and the Ethiopian World Federation for all the work that you all are doing to help free us. Yeah, fam, it's been an impactful night. I give thanks to the Creator's Creator. I give thanks so much to my parents for instilling knowledge and wisdom in me and taking me to all the corners of the planet and helping me to see myself all over this world, and for always encouraging me to never give up on myself or my people. I will never give up on myself or my people. I thank Sister Dawn. I thank Sister KK. I thank Chris and Barbara. I thank Sister Erin. I thank everybody who always listens to me every week. Sister Carla, Brother Alex. I thank everybody for listening to me and for tuning in tonight. This episode will be archived if anyone wants to go back to it, or if you want to share it with anyone. I definitely encourage you to please share this episode with other friends and family members, especially if you know that they are intellectuals and they are interested in the advancement of all of our people. We can make it happen, family. We can do it. We have each other and we can do it. So I just give thanks. I want to, let's see. Okay. Yep. And I want to just, you know, wish everyone well. Have a wonderful week ahead. Be fantastic and enjoy your life. Let's stick together, family. Let's stick together and be love and light. Okay. Again, if you need to listen to some really good music, you can check out DJ Pitch Control on SoundCloud.com, PYTCHCONTROLL, honey. Get your life. Listen to some really, really good music. And stay brilliant, family. All right. Love and light. One love.
Many came and are still coming. For ain't nothing really new under the sun. Not the water, not the air, not even the fire. Not even the many souls we encounter from here to there. We've all chosen to be here now, to usher in this golden age of Aquarius. 'Cause we're all brothers and sisters under one sun. We're always gonna be just one.